This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone. Last week on the show, we examined the information war Russia is waging against its own people and much of the rest of the world. This week, it's all about Ukrainians fighting back on all fronts.
The Ukrainian counteroffensive is now underway. Four villages already taken back from Russian control in the south.
There's heavy fighting right now in the area around Kherson, a crucial port
city. This strike hit a key bridge in Kherson city, which is under Russian control.
Meanwhile, more than 100 miles northeast of Kherson, the Russian-occupied Zaporizhia power plant is generating global anxiety.
A team of UN inspectors arrived at Europe's largest nuclear power plant after new shelling shut down one of its two functioning reactors.
As Ukraine grapples with the threat of nuclear disaster amid the launch of an ambitious counteroffensive, it subsists on a steady diet of Western donations.
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson visiting Kyiv today announced a $63 million military aid package, which comes as the U.S. pledged another nearly $3 billion.
But even as money and materiel flow in, many within and without the theater of war worry that victory may be impeded by a decline in something less tangible.
This fatigue about this war and how we're going to continue to support Ukraine is a real worry.
Ukraine trying to make progress in the south, anticipating probably some war fatigue among some of their supporters, particularly in Europe.
The question is, how long can this last? When does the war fatigue set in?
Studies do show a decline in headline news about the war. Global attention is an inevitable casualty of any protracted conflict. Distant hearts and minds are inclined to drift to the next tragedy or intrigue or atrocity. Olga Tokariuk is a journalist, longtime correspondent, and non-resident fellow at the Center for European Policy Analysis, based in Ukraine, where she lives. Welcome to the show.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
President Zelensky said last week that the end of this war and its circumstances depend on the world's attention. Agree?
Yeah, I think people in different countries focusing on what's happening in Ukraine and the atrocities that Russia commits, they put pressure on the governments to continue supporting Ukraine, to continue sending weapons to Ukraine. Only then Ukraine has a chance to win this war.
But it seems as if the governments of Europe and of the United States are continuing the money flow and the weapons flow. So how much do you need international hearts and minds?
These flows are continuing, but they are still not enough. Ukraine's forces are still outnumbered and outgunned by Russian forces.
The government's branding campaign called Be Brave Like Ukraine launched in April with a flurry of t-shirts and social media posts, online videos, billboards, one of which featured a Ukrainian woman saving dogs from a war-torn area. Has the messaging of Ukraine's government changed over the past 6 months?
I think the messaging has been pretty consistent, and that message is we will not let the aggressor take our land without a fight. And also the messaging for the international audience has been pretty consistent as well. There, the message was, this is not just Ukraine's fight. Ukraine is fighting for the values of freedom and democracy. It's just that I think the manner in which it was delivered maybe was transformed. With time, more and more people were engaged in this, so it was not just President Zelensky.
So in that context, Let's talk about First Lady Olena Zelenska. Over the past couple months, she started traveling internationally, giving interviews with the foreign press, and she famously posed for a Vogue cover shoot in July, sitting on war-torn steps in a polished outfit. First of all, what did you think about that Vogue interview? I think it meant something different to Ukrainian women than it meant to its critics.
The critics of this photo shoot and interview were saying that it was somehow glamorizing the war. But in Ukraine, it wasn't seen this way, because war is not just a terrible horror, but it also the life that is still continuing, which might seem weird to people who never experienced living in a war-torn country. But suddenly, Ukrainians realized that, well, yes, the war is terrible, but at the same time, people still go out. People still try to celebrate birthdays. It's the only way to keep sanity and to resist, to keep living your life.
You also observed that the Vogue cover in Ukraine was seen as an image of power that Ukrainian women have in the face of war.
Actually, a lot of Ukrainian women were posting similar photos in a similar pose with a hashtag, sit like a girl. And what they wanted to say with this campaign was that no one can dictate how women should sit or behave or look. And Olena Zelenska somehow symbolized all Ukrainian women who, despite the war, continue to take care of their loved ones, take care of themselves, and do some very important work for the country.
She speaks of the issue of mental health in Ukraine and of the plight of children in bomb shelters and sitting smartly on the steps in Vogue. Is she part of a multi-pronged effort, along with the t-shirts and other branding, to keep hold of the world's attention?
This is definitely part of that effort, but I think this is a very genuine effort. So this is not something like a marketing campaign. Like, she was not very prominent and present in the public space in the first weeks and months of war, but she's been present in a sense that since she became a first lady, she was trying to advance the issues of equality, not just in terms of gender equality, but also rights for people with disabilities and LGBTQ rights. The Russian full-scale invasion began. She added to that the issue of the mental health, something that is very important that Ukraine will have to face in the next years, even after the war is over. Of course, she's involved in this effort to keep Ukraine on the front pages and in the media of the world, but she's also doing a lot internally for the Ukrainian society.
I was thinking about those selfie videos that President Zelensky posted early in the invasion. Those videos were engaged to great effect, not only with his own people, but with the world. How about now? Do they still work?
Yeah, you know, I remember in the very first days after the Russian full-scale invasion began, me and other people whom we were sheltering in our house, internally displaced people from different parts of Ukraine, were sitting in the basement during an air raid alert and watching to these videos of President Zelensky. And they were giving us a really strong morale boost to see that the president of the country is here. He's in Kyiv, recording videos from the outside of his office when Russian propaganda is claiming that he fled the country and he's already hiding somewhere in Poland. That motivated a lot of Ukrainians to resist. And me personally, I'm not watching them as often as I used to. But somehow it feels comforting, you know, to receive notifications that a new video from President Zelensky has dropped.
But you have noted that now that the initial thrust of the war has passed, many Ukrainians criticized the way that Zelensky handled his war communications just before the February invasion. Ukrainian officials seem to be in some denial. And I remember that a couple of weeks before the invasion, he told Ukrainians to prepare for regular barbecues in May.
He argues that he wanted to avoid the panic and also the economic collapse. And in fact, Ukrainian media were reporting all the statements of Western officials and Western media about an imminent invasion. The fact that Ukrainian officials did not explicitly urge people to prepare for a possible evacuation, a lot of people are bitter about it now, and we are seeing this initial super high figures of support to Zelensky, which were more than 90% in the first weeks after the invasion, they are slowly going down. But he remains the most popular politician in Ukraine, with a huge distance between him and the next most popular politician, former President Poroshenko.
There's another way to keep the war viral, and that's memes. Ukraine's Ministry of Defense Twitter has more than 1 million followers and a very biting, dark humor. Is this run by one of the entertainment people that filled Zelensky's staff in the early days?
We have no idea who is that genius behind the Ukraine's Ministry of Defense Twitter account, but that person certainly is probably the most wanted and envied social media manager in all of Ukraine.
Maybe the world.
Maybe, yeah. It's really funny because it was Russia that first started to use its official accounts, its embassies on Twitter, you know, for this trolling and use of memes. But they were doing it very often in a very clumsy way and becoming a target of jokes themselves.
And then there's NAFO, the North Atlantic exactly. Fella Association.
Yeah. Yeah, NAFO sounds then similar to NATO, and their motto is NAFO expansion is non-negotiable. It's this army of animated dogs. It started from the tweet of a Russian ambassador to Vienna who engaged in a debate with one of these cartoon dogs. And suddenly, like, he was receiving a lot of replies and he tried to argue with them. But of course, like, he was swept away by all this trolling and memes that they were creating. And it became a phenomenon because this NAFO movement is also a charity movement raising money for servicemen who are fighting in Ukraine, for Georgian Legion and some other fighters in Ukraine. And to become a fella, you have to make a donation first. And then you will be given this personalized avatar. And it's remarkable that actually they've been making such a difference in a battle against disinformation on Twitter by reacting to posts of Russian government officials. It was even noted by the Ukrainian Ministry of Defense. They tweeted in support of NAFO. I'm also researching disinformation. And I led several research projects on disinformation on Twitter. And I'm amazed to see how it actually can be countered, not just with debunking, not just with facts, but with very witty trolling and, of course, in huge numbers.
But do you think this can also stave off war fatigue?
Humor is a very powerful tool. Of course, in this situation, it's almost always black humor. But humor helps Ukrainians to keep up their spirits and to resist. Mm-hmm. And I think for people around the world who support Ukraine, it also helps them somehow to alleviate this pressure from heavy, difficult news and also their own lives that might have been affected by this war in terms of rising costs and shortages of food or other things. Like laughing it out in the times of crisis, I think helps to somehow survive and deal with it better.
Olga, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Olga Tokariuk is a journalist based in Ukraine.